Radio West, Doug Fabrizio. This week on the program, we're talking about LDS temple garments and the outspoken Mormon women who are not comfortable wearing them. The idea came from a recent article in the New York Times written by Ruth Graham. Graham wrote about how, for some women, the garments, they don't fit, they don't breathe, they create medical conditions or aggravate existing ones. But we also wanted to understand the history of LDS garments as part of the story. So we turned to the historian Benjamin Park, and we began our conversation with his reaction to the article in the New York Times.
I think there's two dynamics going on. First, the internal discourse within the LDS world. A few years ago, the institutional church put out a video giving detailed information and background to LDS garments, both the production of them, the wearing of them, the symbols, and so forth. And I really think that was a watershed moment for a lot of Latter-day Saints, to the point where they saw it as still a sacred thing, but a sacred thing that could be discussed in public spaces. And I imagine that freed a lot of Latter-day Saints to feel that they could talk about it in ways that would not get them in trouble or would not make them feel guilty. And so fortunately, that meant a lot more people feeling comfortable coming forward to discuss, you know, difficulties or problems with garments. So I think that's the internal discourse. The external discourse, I think the general public has become more religiously literate in the sense that they are aware that things like garments exist and that they don't have to be as exotic as previously considered, that many religions have forms and rituals and vestments that outside of their context may seem a bit alien, but when understood within their context, make a bit more sense. So as a result of this, I think we're going to get a lot more fruitful dialogue like what we see in the New York Times article.
Did Latter-day Saints invent garments, or are there other examples of sacred clothing in religious history?
Like most aspects of the Latter-day Saint tradition, like most aspects of religion in general, Joseph Smith, when he introduced garments in Nauvoo in 1842, was drawing on long precedents or elements that you might find in the Bible, references to sacred vestments, temple clothing, things going all the way back to stories of Old Testament patriarchs, and introducing sacred clothing to cleanse the worthy from the sins of their generation. And so when Joseph Smith introduces the temple rituals in 1842 in Nauvoo, he also introduces the accompanying sacred clothing that would go on under undergarments. Now, of course, there's not only the scriptural precedent, but there's also cultural precedent. Many of these garments and the symbols had resonances with masonry that Joseph Smith was also introduced to in the same time. But just like the temple in general, Joseph Smith saw these secular practices and provided them sacred meaning. And so the same symbols, the same rituals, the same types of clothing that you would have saw in a Masonic order were now transformed, translated into something that had much more deeper sacred meaning. And so all the people who were introduced to these new rituals were expected to wear these underclothing as a outward expression of their internal commitments.
But so the thing that interests me, though, is this isn't just sacred clothing. Clearly, there are all kinds of sacred clothing. There are vestments and habits and robes. But the idea of sacred undergarments that contain important symbols that you're expected to wear always, that seems pretty unique. Yes, there have been sacred garments, but undergarments with a kind of level of expectation like that, am I wrong? That seems pretty unique.
It's especially unique in the Protestant world, right? One of the great breakoffs from Protestantism when Martin Luther critiqued the Catholic tradition and set off the modern Protestant world as we now know it was arguing that religion was much more of, you know, in your belief than your practice, right? Cutting away what they saw as the deranged sacraments of the apostate Catholic religion, where things like vestments and clothing and garments were a distraction from your internal zeal for God. And among the many things that Joseph Smith does is he kind of rolls back that religious revolution and argues that, no, there are things in the physical embodiment of clothing that can capture the sacrament nature of the divine. And so I think you're right that in a nation and in a culture like America that's dominated by a Protestant mainstream, things like sacred underwear may seem out of place. And that's why Mormons for a long time were probably quite uncomfortable talking about it, because there wasn't much cultural connection between them and the world around them.
Well, are they even now comfortable talking about them? Which sort of leads us to an important part of the story that I wanted you to mention. You were referring to it there a moment ago. The idea of why this is so sensitive, if not even taboo in some ways among Latter-day Saints to talk about their garments, is that they contain these important symbols that are used in temple rituals. How much of that can you talk about?
Yeah, I think for the longest time, it wasn't just uncomfortable to talk about, but it was forbidden for many people to talk about, because like the temple rituals themselves, Latter-day Saints were told that these are not just sacred, but confidential. It's just between you and God. And to bring your discussion of these sacred garments into the public sphere would be sacrilege. It would be lessening the distinct religious meaning of this sacred secret practice. I think a lot of this changed, as I mentioned, when the church put out their video that was very explicit about church practices, but there are still some lingering uncomfortableness, both in terms of they feel like this would be, you know, bringing pearls before the swine, that you're talking about something very sacred in a very unsacred sphere. But also they recognize that when you're discussing things like garments, that means so much to believing Latter-day Saints. They place so much belief and devotion and connection into these garments. They fear that if they discuss this with the broader public, they're not going to understand, and they might become the point of ridicule. They might be the point of misunderstanding, and it might be, you know, the 19th century all over again, when we were outcasts from the broader society. So I think both the fear of ridicule and the lingering beliefs of sacred secretness lead to a Latter-day Saints for a long time, but even now in the 21st century, to be remiss to discuss garments in public.
Okay, so we know basically Joseph Smith invents them, that he takes them from Masonic secular rituals, gives them a sacred meaning. But what were they like? What were those first garments like? What did they look like? What were they like to wear, if you can say?
They were uncomfortable. I mean, they were very long. They covered a lot more space than they do now. They would go from your ankle to your wrists. They had a collar, like most long john underwear back in the 19th century, where you didn't bathe much during the winter. You would be sewn into them for long periods of time during the winter. They really were covered almost your full body to give you the full spiritual covering that the armor of God is supposed to provide. It wasn't until the 20th...
Wait. Were they wool? Were they cotton? I mean, I'm just trying to imagine what they were like.
They weren't as formally regulated as they are today. Most Latter-day Saints were expected to make their garments on their own, many of them anyway, and you would cut the symbols in. So it was a very crude way of, you know, making sure everyone was following it. It's not until the 1920s that the church appeases on two fronts. One, they say, okay, they don't have to be, you know, long sleeve and cover your full legs. They can be two pieces, and we'll have, you know, a central body creating them, and you can actually buy them. And then you start seeing, you know, the church actually produce the garments and Latter-day Saints buy them mostly at cost. But what you find fascinating is long time over these years, as these garments become much more modern, and they often replicate what would be male underwear. Because, yes, they are becoming more modern, but after a specific pattern. And it was always after the male undergarment, which is why we still see this gender divide in who are these garments made for.
Let me go back to the early days, and because this idea of comfort seems important. The idea of sort of finding that balance between observing this ritual and being incredibly uncomfortable because of it. So I'm thinking of pioneers and early church members walking across the plains in sometimes intense heat, working in fields in the summer, and you're wearing these things. Are there any references to people complaining about them, writing about them, men or women at that time?
You know what? Back then, clothing was such a total encompassing aspect of a life that you don't see it that much, because most people, even while they're laboring out in the fields, whether they're endowed there or not, they're usually wearing long sleeve clothing and yeah. wearing long pants.
Yeah, it was a different time.
It was a different time. I mean, it's not until the 20th century that we see modern notions of, you know, wearing tank tops while you're out sweating in your lawn. So I think it mostly matched everyday wear. The question I think that is fascinating is we genuinely don't know if most Latter-day Saints wore their garments all the time, because it wasn't as emphasized until the 20th century that you have to wear the garments. It's part of the temple recommend interview that, you know, an ecclesiastical leader is going to ask you, are you wearing them day or night? Back then, like most aspects of Latter-day Saints tradition in the 19th century, it was much more of an autonomous libertarian type of approach. And we know the leaders were, you know, introducing garments, encouraging garments, but it wasn't as policed or regulated as much as we might see today.
Which gets me to this question. What is the expectation now in the 21st century about wearing garments if you're an active Latter-day Saint, or altering your garment? So I'm wondering, do young Latter-day Saints, I guess that's how I'm thinking about it, do they think about and observe these expectations about garments in different ways today? Is that evolving, I guess?
So I think one thing I can say as a historian is you see the public emphasis from church leaders becoming increasingly fervent in urging Latter-day Saints to wear garments, you know, at all prescribed times. Now, you can look at that fact in two ways. One, that, you know, church members are becoming more vigilant and wearing garments all the time. Or, and I think most scholars take the second option, that the fervent pleas from leaders reflect the fact that many Latter-day Saints are not following the typical prescriptions. Otherwise, they would not be insisting upon it all the time. Jana Reese, who I think you're interviewing later, her recent book on the next Mormons shows that among the younger generations of Latter-day Saints, there's a lot more variety, an eclectic approach to appealing to which parts of the religion they feel matches their world and what parts don't. And I think, so you see this disconnect between the youngest Latter-day Saints who are feeling able to, empowered to even, you know, conform Mormonism to their everyday life, from the leadership who are not comfortable with that elasticity from religious living. And I think the result of that divide is the increasing emphasis from church leaders that we need to go back to fundamentals, we need to be more religiously devout, we need to wear our garments 24/7.
How do you think this New York Times article now is going to change the conversation? It seems to have really opened it up within the LDS community.
I think we see with the current LDS leadership, especially with the Russell Nelson presidency, even with the announcements this week, that this leadership is more willing to change a lot of what had previously seen as traditional and bedrock practices or institutions or organization, the church, very quickly, as long as it's not seen as changing to public pressure. I mean, we've seen this recently on a number of things, whether it be the Saturday night evening of General Conference, you know, a temple being built in a certain region, or the Manti Temple renovations, that the leadership is willing to make these radical changes. And then if they are facing backlash, they might change again, but it'll always be accompanied with an emphasis that we are not changing because we have been told to change. So I think on the one hand, the church is going to do all they can to emphasize that we are not changing as a result of getting feedback from the New York Times and these Latter-day Saint women who are emphasizing we need more autonomy or changes to match modern day lifestyles. They do not want to look like they're giving in. While at the same time, this is adding to a growing chorus that I'm sure their internal polling is probably showing them that changes are going to need to happen. How they go about that changes, how they go about those changes while retaining the impression that they are not changing due to pressure. I mean, that's at the heart of modern day Mormonism, and I imagine we'll see more of that tenuous balance going forward.
Benjamin Park, thanks very much.
Pleased to be with you, Doug.